Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. If you are one of the millions, the exponentially growing number of caregivers of the disabled, chronically infirm, or aged, with responsibilities that never change day to day, week to week, year to year, you know firsthand the mental, emotional, physical, and financial strain that it puts on you. More likely than not, you have experienced the depression, fear, guilt, hopelessness, and helplessness that come along with this heroic but largely understood life role. Caregivers walk a fine line between fulfilling their obligations to their loved one and honoring their obligations to themselves. Because the role they play is straining, isolating, and highly demanding, the caregivers often overlook their own needs and deplete their own resources. That creates an even bigger dilemma for them. How can they be an effective caregiver when they have nothing left to give? Today, my guest, Peter Rosenberger, someone who has walked in those shoes and experienced all its challenges for 28 years, is here to offer you insight and encouragement. He compiled his tried and true advice, down-to-earth wisdom, in his wonderful book, Hope for the Caregiver, Encouraging Words to Strengthen Your Spirit. Through all the challenges Peter has faced as the caregiver for his wife, and when you hear this story, it may seem as if he has taken on way more than his share, Peter has managed to stay emotionally, physically, and financially vital, even humorous. Referred to as being one joke away from being a nightclub act, Peter's outrageous humor brings the fresh air of laughter into the painful places faced by caregivers. He brings an unprecedented personal understanding of the brutal realities facing so many caregivers. In addition to Peter Rosenberger's 3 decades of experience as a caregiver for his wife, he is the author of 3 books and the radio show host of the Peter Rosenberger Show, a show for caregivers. Now, I am privileged and honored to introduce you to this very heroic man, my special guest, Peter Rosenberger. Good morning, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine, but I'm not exactly sure who this guy is you're talking about. I mean, you know, I know me, Randy. I ain't that special.
Okay, but you are. But you are, but you're special.
Okay. But listen, it's a treat to be here with you, and it is a fine time for healing. You know what? There's no time like the present to start on a path towards healing, and this is a fine time to start for those millions and millions of people who are hurting while caring for someone else who is hurting.
Oh, my gosh, yes, yes, yes. Can you share your story with us about how you got into this and that kind of thing?
Yes, it's a lengthy journey. My wife had a terrible car accident when she was a freshman in college. I didn't know her at the time. She came back from a long recuperative period, and that's where I had transferred into the same college. A couple of years older than she was at the time, but we had a lot of mutual friends, and you need to meet Gracie, and they said you need to meet Peter, and this woman, this extraordinary young woman, beautiful young woman. Don't take my word for it. Go out and look at the pictures of her, man. The girl's mighty easy on the eyes. And I noticed that she limped. I noticed she had some scars on her legs, but I didn't have any frame of reference of what it meant to date somebody who'd been injured in this level of severity. And I just saw her courage and her beauty, and then I heard her sing, because she's got a no-kidding voice. I mean, this girl can really belt it. She's done some pretty high-profile things with presidents and everything else, and I knew that I was going to take care of her for the rest of my life. I just didn't know what that meant, and I didn't know how good I would be at it, and I didn't know how miserable I would fail at it. I just knew that this was a soul that was worthy of loving and caring for, and I was a better person being around her. And excuse me, I still hold that same belief today, even though it's taken me down some very difficult and dark paths. She had not lost her legs by that time, but she had had 20 operations or so that I could count. And then under my watch, that has now grown. As of 2013, she had her 78th operation. So that's quite that I can count. I mean, we're not counting some of the smaller things, procedures and so forth. So who knows? But then she's been treated by more than 60 doctors and 12 hospitals and 7 different insurance companies, $9 million, past $9 million. And she gave up both of her legs in the 90s. The injuries to her legs were just so severe that she tried for years to save them. And it was just one of those things where it's like, screw this, just take them off. And that's pretty much her attitude. She said, I'm not going to live like this. And so that's the launch off point for where I have understood the journey of a caregiver. My first surgery with her was as her fiance, and that was 29 years ago last month. And then we were married. We'll be married 29 years in August. So this has been going on a long, long, long time. And a lot of caregivers, I find, Randy, they just kind of recklessly hurl themselves at taking care of somebody who is hurt or disabled or elder or whatever, and think, okay, we got to get through this, and then we'll get on with our life. Well, I took this on when I was 22. This is my life.
You know, that's a true. You're telling a true love story, you know.
Well, it is. excuse me. I've got Tennessee allergies this morning. If I start talking like Bill Clinton, y'all don't be alarmed. Don't.
You know what? I got the same issue
out
here in Florida. It's okay.
I mean, it's in Nashville. That's the part about Nashville they don't tell you about in the brochures here. We got country music and we got allergies. They just leave that back part off. But it is a love story, and it's a love story that for me it has taken the definition of love to a whole other level. I mean, it's not warm feelings, hearts and rainbows and butterflies and unicorns. I mean, it is hard work. I tell my wife it's easy to love her. It's hard to love her well, because to love her well requires something greater than me. I'm not up to the task. And if I try to do it on my own strength, I'm bottomed out miserably. And I still do. I mean, that's still the tendency, is I somehow think that I can control, I can do this, I can do this, and I can't. And I have to get outside help. I have to have a source of love greater than myself. I have to have people around me that help me and cultivate good relationships like that around me that can support me, because it's too much. It's just too much.
Did you ever have, like, survival guilt, you know, or the fact that you're well and she's not?
Well, I think all caregivers deal with three things, every one of us. Insurance is not the top of that list, medical insurance and all that kind of stuff. We deal with fear, obligation, and guilt, all three of those things at different levels and subsets, excuse me, of those topics. And so, yes, to answer your question, absolutely. I don't deal with survivor guilt because she's still alive and she's still, you know, functioning and so forth. And I didn't cause this wreck. I wasn't involved with it. I didn't have anything to do with it. I've just been here doing it. But I, look, for example, you know, I can get up and grab a quick shower and get on the road and do my thing. I can get up and go for, you know, a run, or I can do a lot of things. She can't. And it's easy to feel guilty that way. I can, if I feel like I got to take a break and I'm tired, I got to take a break. Well, then she doesn't get a break from her stuff, but it doesn't help her if I am worn out. I kind of tell my fellow caregivers, if I get a cut on my foot, you know, if it's a significant cut on my foot, I should not feel guilty by stopping to address that cut on my foot, even though my wife doesn't have feet. Just because she doesn't have feet doesn't mean I don't have the right and the responsibility to address the feet that I do have. And what's going to happen is if I don't do that, if I take that attitude of, well, who am I to complain about my cut on my foot and not deal with it, take the time to deal with that, it'll get infected. It's going to compromise my ability to care for her. You can extrapolate that same principle now to every area of a caregiver's life. The best thing you can do for that loved one is to take care of the one person who is standing between them and disaster. And that's the caregiver. That's me. So the best way I can love my wife is to make sure I'm healthy. Now, that doesn't mean that's not being selfish. That's being a steward. So a lot of times, you know, healthy doesn't mean I get to go out and do what I want and make me feel better. It's healthy as being a good steward of my finances, of my emotions, of my heart, of my physical body, of my profession, all those things, because that's the ecosystem that keeps that caregiver sustained.
Right.
And so that's what I'm talking about. So the guilt, what I try to do is help my fellow caregivers understand that guilt is only going to cripple you. And if you're crippled, how are you going to help? Now, if you're doing something that you should feel guilty over, I mean, you know, that's what I tell people. I mean, if you're sitting there slugging down alcohol and or you're, you know, I had one guy call into my radio show and he was taking care of two elderly parents and one of them had Alzheimer's and the other had something else. And I said, well, Steve, what are you doing for yourself? And he said, well, I smoke a little cannabis. Well, I mean, smoking dope may relieve the stress for the moment, but you're ultimately harming the people you're trying to care for because you're harming yourself as a caregiver. That's not a sustainable way to do it. And if you're out going out to strip clubs and everything else, well, that makes me feel better. Well, no, it doesn't. That what that does is that's taking you down a very dark path, and that's going to compromise everything that you're doing. So there are some things, some guilt we should feel because if we're doing something that we should feel guilty of. But when it comes to the emotional dynamics of guilt, of saying, you know, I feel guilty if I don't spend 24 hours. I had a lady call in about that with her mother with Alzheimer's. And she says, I feel guilty if I'm not going to see her every single day for this amount of time. And I said, well, does she know that time is passing? She said, well, no. And I said, well, can you be with her 24/7? She said, well, no. And I said, well, then how many breaks are you allowed to take and who's making that rule? You know, I mean, that's, we put these unreasonable things on ourselves that we've got to somehow be Superman, Superwoman in this situation that doesn't call for it. We do the best we can with what we have, and if the best we can is the best we can, and that's enough.
Right, right. You're a man of great faith, right?
Well, I'm a man who has, my faith is in someone who is great. How about that? Because sometimes I feel like my faith is, you know, I'm about at the kindergarten stage. But, you know, I've come to my Christian faith is a big part of what I do. And I've come to the place that's the source for me. And I have not found anything else that can sustain me. And I have, strong passions and reasons about that. And I've worked through this thing for over a period of 3 decades. And that's where I come to realize that, you know, God's love for me is inexhaustible. And that's what I lean on because I can't lean on my own. And there's a wonderful scripture in Proverbs that says, trust in the Lord with all your heart, lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he'll direct your path. Well, there's a reason that's in there. Because you know what? When we lean on our own understanding, we go back to that fear, obligation, guilt, which, you know, that's, I call it fog, the fog of our own understanding. and you get lost in the fog. I can't think straight. My mind is a dangerous place to go into unaccompanied, Randy. I mean, you know, I don't want to go there by myself in my own mind. I've seen my work, and so I've got to have a source greater than myself that is sustaining me and guiding me and walking with me through these things. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Well, sometimes the valley of the shadow of death is a pretty long valley. And that's where my life is. And so that's just what I've come to lean on. So, yes, my faith is a huge part of my life.
Right. I like what you said in the beginning. This kind of puts it all in perspective. You said, did you create the condition your loved one endures? Can you cure them? Can you control what is happening to them? If you answered no to these questions, you are well on your way to understanding your powerlessness and inability to alter or change the circumstances. I think that puts it so out there for them, for people.
Well, I think that's an important thing to remember, that, you know what, I didn't do this to my wife. And even to those parents out there that have special needs children, you didn't do this to them. You may have brought them into the world, but you didn't do this to them. Okay, and you need to. My prayer is that you would recognize that as parents, and I'm speaking directly to those parents out there, particularly special needs children, that you would recognize that this is not something that you did, that you have somehow created this mess, and now this is your penance or whatever. No, that's not it at all, and you are doing the best that you can to care and love for them. I got a brother with a special needs daughter, 7 years old. She's got cerebral palsy and severe cognitive problems. You know what? They love her. She's cared for. She's engaged. She's well-fed. She's clothed, and she's happy, and they take her everywhere they go. And you know what? And she's a part of their life. And if you sit there and just beat yourself up because your kid has special needs, how are you helping that kid, and how are you helping yourself as you grow, and what are you missing in the richness of learning to love someone who cannot reciprocate necessarily.
Right. You said it is their pain. We can hate it for them. It can break our hearts. But at the end of the day, we remain powerless to lift this burden from them. the other thing that you said in your book is that the person really has to, you know, I guess caregivers feel like they have to just keep that person happy all the time. And you said that we can be polite, caring, attentive, and upbeat, but the person we are caring for has to choose their emotional and mental state. Like people that have severe pain who are still joyful, or people with minimum pain who just exude misery. What do you have to say about that?
Well, my wife has not known a day without relentless pain since 1983. I mean, it was an Evel Knievel kind of wreck. I mean, she busted up everything. She's in pain all the time, and she has been all this time. And most people would never know it simply because of her attitude. And I will give this girl props on this, man. The girl has an exuberant attitude. And, I mean, she's even pushed herself to snow ski as a double amputee, and which is quite astonishing. And she said, look, I'm going to be in pain regardless. I might as well have some fun. And I thought, what an attitude. But I've seen people with far less stuff in their life, who are just miserable people. And you can probably think of somebody right now, Randy, who's just miserable. And you don't even, it's work to be around them, and they just sit there and gripe and complain all the time, and they're just miserable people.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, yeah, got it right away. Got the picture right away.
Well, you remember that skit on Saturday Night Live about Debbie Downer? You know, and if you haven't, go out and look at it on YouTube or something. But it's pretty funny. I mean, it captures these just miserable people. And you know what? We're as happy or as miserable as we want to be. Mm-hmm. And I can look through history and show people who have dug deep into their own hearts and minds and said, you know what? I've been victimized, but I'm not going to be a victim. You ever get the feeling in our country that we have raised a generation of victims?
Oh, gosh, yes. Oh,
just,
don't even get me started.
Well, it gets annoying, and somehow we got a political class that seems to play to that victim status. And I'm thinking, man, grow up, be adult, for heaven's sakes. And And you know, you don't have to be miserable. You know, yes, you may not have all the things that you want, but you know what? You're alive, and there's beauty around you, and this is the way you look at it. Elie Wiesel, who wrote from the Holocaust, from his own experiences from the Holocaust, and he learned to see the beauty in life, even in the midst of this horrific set of circumstances. I've looked at my wife go through what she's gone through. And I asked her one time, how do you do this? And she said, well, sometimes the pain each day brings clouds the joy that's there. But she knows that there's joy behind that cloud of pain. And she knows that there's beauty and life around her. And so she tries to embrace it to the best of her abilities with it. And I think that's the case for us as caregivers. Yeah, what we're dealing with, man, it's painful. It sucks at times. And nobody likes it. But at the same time, there is, I mean, I'm looking out my window today when I'm talking to you. Everything is green. Everything is lush. It's a beautiful day in Tennessee, regardless of the allergies. So take some take and get outside and have a good time.
Right. Right. She must have tremendous inner strength, you know, to be able to do what she does. But, I mean, it's her choice. It's her choice to either, you know, live and lie there or to get up and, you know, to lie there or to get up and live. And she chooses to get up and live.
She is like a force of nature. I mean, it's like, I shudder to think what this woman would have been like if she wasn't disabled. she'd have killed me. But you know what? And I think that's the thing is that you realize that, wait a minute, life is more, you're never going to be perfect enough. You know, even you look at some of the guys out there, professional athletes and so forth, who are doing these things, and they have bad days too. You know, Peyton Manning has bad days too. It's all relative. You're never going to be physically, emotionally, financially, spiritually perfect enough in this life for you to say, okay, I've got it, now I can go be happy.
We wouldn't be here if we were perfect.
I could be joyful today, and you could be joyful even while in pain. You could be joyful. I had a lady interview me one day. She says, how can you laugh with all the stuff that you have to look at? How are you able to laugh at this? And I said, it's a muscle that I work. I mean, I watch funny shows. I read funny books. I listen to stand-up comics. I'm getting ready to go down, and one of my bucket list things, Randy, is I'm going to go do an open night mic in a local comedy place here, a pretty famous one here in Nashville. I'm working up the courage to go and do it. And I speak all the time, but to get up and do stand-up comedy, you know what? But I love stand-up comedy. I love the intensity of it. You're alone by yourself on a stage with a microphone, and you're going to speak out of your own journeys and help bring laughter to people, and that's a real gift. And I've learned that you can laugh even while tears are on your cheeks, and you must laugh. You've got to. You can't take so much of yourself seriously. Yes, what we deal with is serious. Yeah, what Gracie and I deal with is heartbreaking at times, and it's frustrating and all that kind of stuff. But you've got to learn to laugh at things, and not take yourself so seriously. Otherwise, you're not gonna make it. You're not going to make it. Life is too grim. But you know what? I look at grim things every day. I look at a woman who's missing both legs every day and lives with pain. Must I be grim? I look at harsh things. Must I be harsh? My wife is a double amputee. Must I be? No.
Right.
This is my
right.
life. That's her life. And I can be as joyful as I want to be. And that's what I hope my fellow caregivers That's my goal, is to help them see as well.
Right. I think that is such an important statement. You know, acceptance of our lot in life. Each person has their own journey that they're here to do.
Everybody's got to experience their own experience.
Exactly. Exactly. There was another thing that you said that interested me. And you were talking about a caretaker's identity and how they become lost in the details, you know, that they eventually begin to speak about we or he or she, and they sort of forget the I in that.
Well, caregivers, we all deal with, go back to that fear, obligation, and guilt. And then what happens is those are the emotions we deal with. We also become isolated, the three I's I call them. We become isolated, we lose our independence, and we lose our identity. And that's what kind of keeps us in that fear, obligation, guilt cycle too, because in that losing our identity, we become that obligation, for example, it leads us to resentment very quickly. Obligation is a petri dish for resentment. And when you feel that way and you're isolated and you've lost your identity and you're losing your independence, then you're going to start resenting that person you're taking care of and so forth. And it goes into this vicious cycle. The loss of identity is the one of the clearest indicators that your caregiver is struggling. When you ask them, say, how you doing? Well, we just got home from the hospital, or she's having a bad day, or he's not doing too well, or whatever.
Okay.
But speaking in the I word is so important, because that's pulling from your own heart. And what I want to do is help my fellow caregivers learn to say, you know what? I'm tired. I'm scared. I hurt. I'm pissed off. Whatever. I don't care how angry they are. I don't care how depressed they are. As long as they're saying the word I, then you can work with that. Then you can say, you know what? This is the path towards recovery here. This is the path towards you getting some help and some healing in your own heart. As long as you're speaking for someone else, you're never going to be able to identify your own pains, your own hearts. Go back to the foot analogy. I can't say that her feet hurt when it's my foot that's cut. She didn't even have any feet. My foot hurts. I hurt. I've got to address my hurt. And a codependent, you know, when a codependent dies, somebody else's life flashes in front of their eyes.
Right, exactly.
You know, do you want to wake up every day and ask somebody else what kind of day you're going to have? That's a part of losing their identity. And so I want to help caregivers come back and gain their identity as an individual. Healthy caregivers make better caregivers. And how are you going to be healthy if you don't even know who you are?
Right, exactly. How do you feel that, you know, the person that you're giving care to, do most people want their caregivers to have a life of their own, or does that really vary?
It doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter. Think about my brother with his daughter with special needs. She's like taking care of an 18-month-old. She's 27 years old. Mm-hmm. She doesn't even understand these concepts.
Right.
It doesn't matter what the loved one, the patient, the hurting loved one, the disabled loved one, the elderly loved one, it doesn't matter what their desires are for you. That can change from day to day, moment to moment, depending on if they're having a bad day or whatever. All that matters is you recognize as a caregiver, I've got to be healthy, and me being healthy is a worthy goal.
Right.
I've got to be healthy physically, fiscally, emotionally, spiritually, professionally. I cannot simply just go through the motions here. I've got to actively promote my own health. And what does that look like? So, you know, what happens is we'll go to elaborate lengths to get them to their doctors, all the doctor visits. My wife's been treated now by more than 60 doctors. That's a lot of doctors.
That is.
And yet 72% of caregivers don't see their own doctor regularly. Now, that's a time bomb, Randy.
Yeah.
How are you going to know that if you have high cholesterol? How are you going to know if your sugars are high? How are you going to know if you have high blood pressure? How are you going to know if you're at risk for certain diseases and so forth? And the stress on you as a caregiver is just ungodly, man. It's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
And stress leads to disease. We all know
this. Absolutely.
How are you going to know this if you're not seeing your own doctor? But you're going to so many doctors for somebody else. Well, it's time to go to your own doctor for your own health.
Yeah.
And I've got a doctor who really loves me. He's a great guy, and he puts eyeballs on me at minimum of 2 times a year for blood work, check-in, all that kind of stuff, just for well visits.
Hmm.
And that is a priority for me. I push myself physically to go out and do martial arts. I'm testing for my black belt next month.
That's awesome.
And I push myself on this. One of the things I do in my art is we learn how to fall. I mean, I can do flips and aerials and all that stuff. I'm almost 52 years old, and I'm doing these things. And if I slip and fall, I know how to slap out of it so that I don't get injured. Well, why is that important? Well, in Tennessee alone, we had 186,000 people last year in emergency rooms that were from falls. So all of a sudden, as we're rushing around taking care of somebody, what happens if I fall? What happens if I break my leg, sprain my ankle, whatever?
Oh.
And if I'm not doing things to actively promote healthy lifestyles for myself and help my fellow caregivers promote those lifestyles, I'm not really helping.
No, you're not. You're not. You have a policy about people who criticize how you handle caregiving issues. And I'm sure, you know, people always have something to say when they really are not involved. But I love this policy you have. The length of time I will listen to someone criticize is in direct proportion to how much time the critic spent helping. I just love that, Peter.
Well,
that's great.
Listen, I appreciate that because I've been the recipient of this. I mean, when you've been doing this as long as I have, you've pretty much hit all the big stuff that goes on. You know, there's very little in the world of a caregiver that I haven't felt, and I have felt the stinging criticism from others who want to get in there and somehow get up in my business. And that's okay. I cultivate people around me who will get in my face. I do. I cultivate those people. But those people are there for me. They are committed to me. They love me. They are helping me. These people that sit on the ancillary and want to parachute in and give me a bunch of criticism, I'll get back up in their face. And I'll tell them, look, I don't listen to people in the cheap seats. You want to be involved, you get down here and get some skin in the game. And,
that's right.
And otherwise, your opinion is worthless to me. And I don't have time for people who bloviate. My life is just too complicated. It's too hard. And quite truthfully, it's insulting. It's insulting when people who do not have any kind of, track record of being involved with what I do, they're not showing up to help. They're not doing anything but just offering their opinion. Well, opinions are like rears. Everybody's got one, and some of them stink more than others. I'm sorry, that's just blunt and gross, but who cares? That's just the way it is. And you know, I want to free up my fellow caregivers to understand that just because you're hurting doesn't mean you're at the mercy of people who are not.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't get it. Go back and look in the book of Job. Go back and look at Job 2:13. I challenge anybody who's listening to this, go look at the word in Job 2:13. Most people are familiar with the story of Job, and I won't get into all that today. We just don't have the time, but Job's friends came up, and they sat with him for 7 days after all this stuff happened to him, and they were just aghast, and they sat there 7 days without saying a word. Now, how many people do you know, Randy, that can go 7 minutes without saying a word when confronted with something? Look at what social media has done to us. And we got to comment on whether it's 9/11 or this going on here or Benghazi, whatever. Everybody's got to weigh in with their opinion on what should be done. And sometimes it's okay for us to do nothing but just shut up. And if you'll notice in the book of Job, the next 30-something chapters, the wheels come off theologically because these guys did what? All his friends started opining on why this happened to Job.
Oh.
And they were all wrong, every one of them. And at the end of it, God appears to Job, and he said, look, Job never even knew why this happened to him. God never told him. And God said to him, look, you go pray for your buddies and sacrifice on their behalf, lest I deal with them according to their folly. Because they were so off the mark. And most people are going to be. They have no idea why this stuff is happening. Anybody that tells you they know why it's happening to you, they'll lie about other things, too, so give them a lot of space because they're idiots. They don't need to come in there and start just beating on you. You're doing the best that you can to take care of somebody. Till, I'm very protective of my fellow caregivers. You know, there are two kinds of people in this world. There are sheep, there are wolves, and there are sheepdogs. And I'm a sheepdog, and I'm going to look after these folks because they're trying. I don't care how badly they are doing at it. If they are trying to put themselves between a vulnerable loved one and disaster, I want to help them. And I know what it's like to struggle, and I know what it's like to have people come up and put all kinds of crap on you to tell you what you should be doing and should have done. Man, they should have all over you. And you're hurting already, and you're thinking, man, your self-esteem is in the toilet, and you think, I'm just sucking at what I do. And I feel beat up all the time. And And it just, you know, it, that's just cruel. And
it
I want to give my fellow caregivers a permission to hold their hand up and say, talk to the hand. I'm not talking to you.
Right.
And I'm certainly not going to listen to you. Mm. And that's okay, by the way, to all you caregivers doing that. You know what I'm talking about. You know what it feels like to be the sting of when people come up and criticize you and you're just doing the best you can. And so what if you messed up? Who cares? So what if you made a mistake? You made a mistake. You're trying again the next day. And that's what I'm trying to do is their self-esteem is just in the toilet. I just want to help lift them up and say, you're doing something extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Please, please don't beat up on yourself and don't allow other people to beat on you as well.
Right. That's such a good message. I want to give you an opportunity to talk about whatever you want to talk about, but I would really like to hear about Standing with Hope, this organization that you started or Gracie started.
Well, this was her vision after she gave up both of her legs. It was 20 years ago this month, and she gave up her left leg. She'd given up her right leg 4 years prior, and she saw an interview in the hospital. She walked for the first time that day on two artificial legs, and she saw an interview later on that afternoon with Princess Diana and a documentary that she was doing with all the landmine victims she was doing with in Southeast Asia and helping amputees there. And Gracie just said, she just lifted her hands up in her hospital bed. She looked down at her freshly amputated left leg, her healed up amputated right leg, and she said, God, I want to do this, and please equip me to do this. I want to be able to help my fellow amputees, people who look just like me. Mm-hmm. And that was the birth of Standing with Hope. And what we do is we work with the government of Ghana in West Africa, and we teach and equip local workers there on how to build prosthetic limbs for their own people. And it's not a one-time thing because children need new legs as they grow. Gracie just got a new pair of legs this year, and she's been an amputee now for a very long time. And so we got to make sure there's a sustainable infrastructure. So we're sitting over supplies and things like that, which we've got some things going out this week and some more things going out next week. I've got a team heading back over there at the end of August, and we'll be continuing training and treating patients, and it's been a great work. We've been working over there for some time, and we do all this to be able to share our Christian faith, but we treat people from all walks of life, whatever faith they happen to be, or no faith at all. As long as they're an amputee, we're going to try to do the best we can to put a leg on them, get them walking, and get them standing with hope. And it's a great work. And then out of that, my board of directors sat down with me, and they said, look, you know, we've recognized, Peter, that you have this knowledge base of dealing with caregivers, and we'd like for you to start a second outreach now to caregivers based on your journey, how to help these folks that are struggling with this. And so I kind of based what I did on Standing with Hope, on the model of creating a sustainable infrastructure. I started writing down, well, what would I say to my 22-year-old self that took this on? And that's what birthed all this and the radio show and so forth. And you can see all of this at standingwithhope.com. And I'd love for your listeners to go out and take a look at it and just see. And we collect used limbs, too, by the way. I call it Operation Footloose, Randy. Turn that foot loose so we can recycle it. And we play the theme from Footloose on my radio show when we talk about it. Because they all go to a local prison here in Nashville where inmates volunteer in a one-of-a-kind program, nothing like it in the world. And they volunteer to disassemble these used prosthetic limbs so that we can reuse some of the parts, the pylons, the feet, the knees, the screws, the adapters, and all that stuff. We can reuse all that stuff and build a new leg with recycled parts over in West Africa. So it's very cool.
Oh, my gosh. That's so wonderful. It's so wonderful.
Isn't that fun? I mean, you know.
It is.
And that's what gives both Gracie and I a lot of passion for what we do to recognize, okay, what we deal with sucks. Yeah, it sucks. Who cares? We got to move on now. We got to live life. And if we're going to live like this, let's do something of value that makes our hearts just leap with joy every time we do it. And whether I'm at the prison with these guys looking at me, I had a prisoner came up to me over there in the shop, and he said, you know, I've never even thought about people with disabilities until I started doing this program. I've never done anything positive with my hands until I started doing this. And I thought, you know, this is worthwhile. And as I look at the face of my fellow caregivers, when I go out and speak and so forth, and I'm sitting there, whether I'm signing books or whatever, I'm just talking to them, listen to their stories, and I can see the heartache in their faces and the tears. and I get to connect with them, and I get to come on shows like yours and reach whoever's listening, because I know there are people listening to your show right now who are just weeping because I'm the first person's ever told them things that I'm telling them, that give them permission to say, hey, you don't have to listen to people beat on you. You're doing okay. You're an extraordinary person. There are a lot of people out there that have never even heard that message, Randy, and you're giving me the opportunity to say that to them. That's a fine place for healing. You know?
Yes.
That is a fine place for healing. And I'm
thank you, Peter.
Help me be a part of that.
That's so generous. Yeah, and Gracie is really doing everything she came here to do. She is really living it, giving it back. You know, I can't think of another way to say it, but making lemonade out of lemons, and you know, all those kind of things.
We're making lemon meringue pie out of it. We're having a good time.
That's great.
Hard days ahead of us, but that's okay. We're still doing the best we can with what we have.
Okay, aren't we all? Hopefully. That's all we can do. We are running so close out of time, but this book is Hope for the Caregiver, Encouraging Words to Strengthen Your Spirit. Peter Rosenberger, last name is Rosenberger.
Peter, what is your website?
No,
it's not Irish. I'm just kidding.
What is your website?
StandingWithHope.com.
Okay.
StandingWithHope.com. And if your listeners want to go find out more about the radio show, you can text the word CARE, C-A-R-E, on your phone to 64895. 64895.
Okay.
And you'll get a message from our radio station, and you can go take a listen, see what you want. You can listen
and
call in.
Wow. Now, there was also a website, caregiverswithhope.com. What is that one?
That's just part of the whole thing. It all's part of the whole thing. You can go to caregiverswithhope.com, standingwithhope.com. Standing with Hope is the parent company, but we've launched the whole Caregivers with Hope as well. Either way, you're going to get into our world there, and we're thrilled to have you come and check us out either way.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much for coming here and sharing this inspiration and wisdom. I mean, you and Gracie are amazing people. I know that you don't see it in yourself, but you are a hero, Peter, and it is so wonderful to meet you.
Well, we serve an amazing God, and I'm grateful for it all comes down to that for me, and I'm grateful that he has reached into the misery of our lives and pulled out something extraordinary, and we're grateful to serve him in this, and that's what our Christian faith does for us, to recognize that, you know what, he redeemed us, and we're grateful for it. So thank you, Randy. Thank you for what you're doing.
You're
yourself out there to heal, to bring healing to a lot of folks and give them a place to do it, and I just wish you all the best in this.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm giving back for my own reasons. So, you know, we all have our reasons for wanting to help people, and I'm giving back for gifts that I've been given. So, anyway, thank you so much, and give a kiss to Gracie, and I really appreciate you coming on.
In fact, this is a family show. I ain't going to tell you all the things I'm going to do, Randy. She lets me. Well, Kathy Lee Gifford asked me one time on the Today Show, I said, well, I guess you're not a leg man, huh? And I said, man, she pops those suckers off every night and says, knock yourself out, big boy. I'm going to bed. And Kathy Lee didn't know how to respond. So
that's awesome.
We have a good
that's
time,
awesome.
So she may let me feel a little leg right now.
Okay. All right. That sounds great. Well, give her a kiss for me, but that's all. That's all. All right.
Randy.
Have a wonderful day. Thank you so much.
All right. We'll see you.
Okay. So we are out of time for today. You can reach me at randygfine.com, RANDIGFINE.com. Thanks for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine, RANDIGFINE.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait to be